It must have been a huge thrill to be named the 60th National Teacher of the Year in 2010. And the College of Education at Murray State is clearly delighted that you're coming for the Harry M. Sparks lecture on June 14th. One of the things that was written about you was that you are a learner-centered educator to the max. Explain what that means to us.
Absolutely. Well, first of all, I am equally as excited to be joining the Murray State community because I think that colleges of education are so crucial to the way that our society has to continue to make sense of the narrative of education. And I think in a lot of ways, we're at a point where we have to kind of change the narrative about what education is like in our country. And so, you know, certainly the places that are growing our teachers are important places to be having those conversations. But when I talk about a learner-centered classroom, you know, one of the things that I oftentimes tell people is that if they walked into my classroom, one of the first things that they would notice is that my desk is in the back of the classroom. And that really is an indication of this learner-centered philosophy in that the space of the learning is for all of us. I tell people that anybody who comes into our classroom gets elevated to the status of learner, that it's my intent to kind of dispel those hierarchies that differentiate teacher from students, you know, and instead just elevate everyone to that status where we are learning together. And it doesn't mean that I'm not facilitating. It doesn't mean that I am blind, you know, I'm the blind leading the blind by any means. But my job as the lead learner in a classroom is to be the one who understands what it means to be curious, who understands what it means to struggle, who understands what it means to persevere, who understands what those learning dispositions are, what it means to live them, and then how is it that we model those dispositions and create that kind of culture of learning in a classroom environment that allows kids to really flourish and grow into those same kinds of self-sustaining learners.
Give me a for instance. You teach 10th through 12th grade at Johnston High School in Johnston, Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
Pick a lesson, a short one, and tell me how you would approach the subject.
Sure. So, for example, we actually just finished school about a week and a half ago. One of the lessons that we were working on with my 10th grade class towards the end of the year, we were working on a unit in which we were trying to come to terms with what truth was all about. What it meant, what, you know, how is truth constructed and what is truth? And as part of that, we read the Arthur Miller play called The Crucible. Mm-hmm. And as part of that play, what we were looking at was kind of the role of one's selfhood or one's reputation, because that idea of reputation really resonates with 10th graders. And how is it that you, what is the truth of a person's reputation? And so one of the ways that, you know, we really make that learner-centered is, first of all, to meet them right where they are and to make that really accessible to them. So one of the first things that I did was, sometimes that play can seem a little distant to students. And so I actually wrote a high school version of The Crucible. And it was really short. I called it the Facebook Crucible. And I essentially took the story of The Crucible and rewrote it as this kind of melodrama about some high school students and this Facebook scandal. And what happened was that they could connect, you know, certainly to the characters and to the situation, and then they were able to transfer their learning. So what we came to understand over the course of a single class period about reputation, about lies, about truth, about fabrication, those kinds of things, we were able to then transfer to our reading of the play. And then a lot of times I would talk to them about that, right? So then I would say, so this is why I did this. So I created this, you know, this Facebook version of The Crucible so that I could demonstrate to you how you transfer your learning and how it is that we come to understand something that's close to us first, and then we can reapply it to something different. And then I would have students, then as they were reading, I would have them kind of follow some patterns and things like that in the text. Even though I was the one who was doing some of the construction there initially, what happened was I kind of empowered them to not rely on me. So then they were able to make the kinds of connections that they needed to make as they continued to read.
Neat. We're further told that one of your beliefs is that problem solving and critical thinking are useless without the facts, but the reverse is also true. That puts a whole new wrinkle in things, doesn't it?
It does. So I think that certainly the way that we think critically is absolutely crucial to the way our students make sense of their world, and we certainly have an obligation and a responsibility to help them to become autonomous and not tell them what to think, but teach them how to think.
I assume in Iowa the situation is similar to what it is in Kentucky, that teachers are looking at being assessed based on their students' performance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I'm assuming that you have seen some good performance results from your methodology.
Yeah, the state of Iowa, certainly like so many states around the country, is really charged at rethinking how it is that we evaluate teachers. I kind of sense a two-part question in there, or at least a two-part conversation. Certainly in that the role of teacher evaluation as it presents itself is part of that narrative that we have to contend with, I think, in this country right now when it comes to education, and we have to be sure to, I think, approach that with a careful sense of balance and remember that no single measure, I think, could ever give us, the worth of a teacher. Because one of the things that I oftentimes, I know from my own experience to be true is that there are times when I work with a student and I might work really, really hard with that student, but the work that we did together doesn't show up until a year or two later in somebody else's class. The same thing happens to me, right, where a teacher who worked with a student a couple of years ago really did phenomenal work, but it didn't really show up until they happened to come into my class. And that has less to do with me and more to do with the continuum of learning that we see our students on. And we have to certainly remember that our students are on a continuum of learning and that, there isn't necessarily a methodology that always creates the exact kind of desired effect that we want to have in our students, because we're dealing with, human beings who are maturing at their own paces. That said, I do think that I have been able to see some really great strides for my students, really important strides. And I think that it comes really from knowing the difference between giving students a lot of tasks to focus on and really knowing what our purpose for learning is. And when I have a clear sense of what it is that my students need to learn and how to help them learn, how to help them construct their own learning, they become more invested in it and they really flourish in ways that they couldn't if I saw my role in the classroom as one in which I was just going to give them information and have them repeat that information back to me.
Well, I think it's really neat what you did with the Arthur Miller situation, and I'm thinking how what you're doing in the classroom might apply to the workforce as well. But that's a whole nother discussion.
Yeah.
I'm wondering what your workshop is going to be for the teachers before your lecture. It's great that your lecture at 4:30 p.m. is open to all, as is dinner following. Shall we just focus on the lecture and what you'll be presenting?
Absolutely, absolutely. What I'm going to be focusing on is really to take a look at one of the ways, and I kind of have mentioned it already, but to look at one of the ways in which I think we can reframe the narrative about teaching and learning in this country. And most importantly, I think it means that we have to be willing to look at our mistakes. And it's something that, especially in the face of all of this conversation about teacher evaluation and when we look at the access we have to all different kinds of data now, I think we have to be willing to look at, certainly our strengths as teachers, but also be able to really embrace a growth mindset. And embracing a growth mindset comes from being willing to grow from our imperfections as teachers. And this is certainly something that I have done. And so I'm excited to kind of share the ways in which I have grown and I have learned to be a better teacher by being a vulnerable teacher, by filming myself in the classroom all of the time and by sharing not just the things that go well, but also sharing, the things that confound me or the things that frustrate me, and to figure out how to struggle through those moments are really the ones that have made me the strongest teacher. And so I'm really passionate about helping, I think, to kind of liberate teachers, really, to think about the ways in which we can grow out of mediocrity and into a different kind of success by looking at our imperfections and our mistakes.
Good for you. And thank you for speaking with me in advance. I hope
Absolutely.
That many of our community members come to your lecture and get excited too.
Well, like I said earlier, I certainly am excited to be joining everyone and to, you know, be part of the community and to have this chance to share this, what I'm so passionate about.